Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, here together with Mike Murphy and Anna Banana, who will be joining us a little bit later. This hour, we are not going to talk about the election. We deserve a mental break, right? So this hour, we're going to talk instead about flowers. However, we will be talking about the pandemic. With infections rapidly on the rise, are you clear on how to get a test if you want to get one? Say that you have some symptoms that concern you. Do you know where to go to check it out? So more and more are looking for information about where exactly and how does one get a COVID test around here. So there are several answers to that in Central Iowa. According to Andrea Cardenas, a health promotion coordinator for the City of Ames Human Resources Department, here are some of your options. By the way, I'll post the information on our website after the show for your reference so that you can double check the numbers and the websites that are expressed during this conversation. Test Iowa is at testiowa.com, and that number is 515-575-2131. Or a toll-free number is 844-844-1561. So again, that's Test Iowa website, and the phone numbers are 515-575-2131, or for the toll-free number, 844-844-1561. All Iowans can go through Test Iowa at no cost. You have to be approved for a test, and you have to complete an assessment and then choose a testing location to set up an appointment at testiowa.com/en. After qualifying for testing, you have to choose additional options in the first listing and then choose Story County, Iowa Test Clinic if you live in Story County. The Story County Clinic is located at the ISU Research Park at 2503 South Loop Drive. To schedule an appointment after qualifying for a test, there's another phone number, 800-866-3492, 800-866-3492, and then you get a QR code with you to an appointment, and your results will be emailed or texted to you within 72 hours of testing. So I know those are a lot of different numbers, so like I said, we will put it on the website for your reference. Okay, McFarland Clinic COVID-19 line, which is at McFarlandClinic.com. That's McFarlandClinic.com/coronavirus. And the phone number is 515-500-6711. That's 515-500-6711. You can also contact your healthcare provider or the McFarland COVID-19 clinic line that I just told you, and this is billed through insurance, or there may be a copay for additional fees. Doctors Now is at doctorsnow.com/COVID testing, doctorsnow.com/COVID testing, and this is a rapid testing facility. It's available in Des Moines. And this is not covered by most insurance providers, so you may have to pay the full cost for the test out of pocket, and there is a fee. It's not cheap, but it appears to be under $100, and you get your results very quickly. So unless you take this rapid test, it normally takes about 72 hours to receive test results, although it takes longer to get the result. The slower tests are the PCR tests, and they're provided through Test Iowa or your healthcare provider, and they are the most accurate and gold standard for COVID-19 testing. So those are three options that are immediately available within those of you who are living in Story County or Polk County. Andreas Cardenas, who sent me this information, recently underwent a test herself. And like I said, she works for the City of Ames. Andrea, thank you for joining us and telling us a little bit about getting a test.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Ursula, I don't know if I should be admitting this on the air, but I've actually been tested 4 times now. I have allergies. And so this past fall, there's just a couple times that I had symptoms, and I work for the city. And part of my role is that I coordinate, when we have someone who's out with COVID symptoms, I reach out to them, talk to them about quarantine, I perform contact tracing. And I didn't want to be someone that came to work and then later found out that I had COVID. So I've actually gone through both Test Iowa and our local McFarland Clinic, respiratory clinic here in Ames.
So that really makes you a frontline worker and a responsible one.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I'd say it's much easier to explain to somebody else how to do it when I've been through the process myself. And when people are trying to figure out how to get tested or where to get tested, they might already be feeling kind of stressed because they're feeling COVID symptoms, or maybe they thought they might have been exposed. It's really very easy to do.
Well, before you go there, what are the symptoms that have caused you? I mean, at what point have you decided? I mean, I know in your case, you know you're potentially being exposed because of the work you do, but there still has to be some sort of moment where you think, okay, this warrants a test. The way I feel warrants a test now. So what is that moment like?
What I'm looking for is something that's more than normal. Like I said, I have allergies, and so sometimes maybe I'll have a little bit of congestion or kind of scratchy throat. But if it's something that's more than normal, and in my experience, like what happened with me is I started getting a low-grade fever. And to me, that's more than normal allergies, and so that's what prompted me to get tested. But really, the main symptoms that really make, if you have any of those symptoms, you want to get tested right away. That would be a cough, shortness of breath, or difficulty breathing, or loss of taste or smell. Those are going to be ones that you want to know. If you experience those, you want to get tested right away. And then at least two of fever, chills, muscle or body aches, headache, congestion or runny nose, fatigue, nausea, and diarrhea. So, I listed a lot of symptoms, and those can be any illness, but they can also be COVID. And so really, the only way to find out is to get tested. So, I really encourage people, if you're feeling some of those symptoms and you're not sure, just go get tested. We went through this, especially early this fall, like I said, with allergies being more common. I called Story County Public Health and I said, "What are you guys telling people? Because I have a lot of people that are wanting to know, like, what, I think it's allergies, so should I get tested?" And I said, "Really, that's the only way to know, because, on my end, I've also had people say, I thought I just had a sinus infection and it was COVID, or, I thought it was just my allergies acting up a lot." And it's because the virus can really present itself in a lot of different ways. Some people experience a mild illness and others have a more severe illness. So definitely encourage everybody to get tested. As you mentioned earlier, Ursula, Tests Iowa is free. There's no cost to it. You do have to make an appointment, but it's open to all Iowans, and it's definitely a great resource that we have available to us here in Story County.
Okay, so tell us what you did then.
When I had symptoms, I called the McFarland Clinic COVID line. And when you call the line, they ask you a series of questions to determine what your symptoms are, when they began, if you think you might have been exposed to someone with COVID, and they determine if you qualify to come in and see a healthcare provider at their clinic.
So they don't ask you to first go to your primary care provider. They'll deal with you directly.
Because if they have somebody with possible COVID-19 symptoms, they're trying to direct all their patients to the respiratory clinic. So that way, they're not having patients in waiting rooms alongside with other maybe healthy patients that are getting a physical or other treatments. They want to make sure if someone might have COVID that they're all going to the respiratory clinic so that they're not potentially infecting others that are not sick or could be at risk. So, I mean, you can also call your healthcare provider. And if it's something that's ongoing symptom, I definitely encourage people to do that as well. And a lot of times the healthcare provider will direct you to the McFarland Clinic, respiratory clinic. Those are two routes to go if you have symptoms. So when I called, they interviewed me on the phone and then they said I qualified to come in and I set up an appointment time. When I got to the clinic, now they have curbside. So actually you can wait outside and call them and let them know that you're there. And then they'll let you know when it's time to come in. I went in. And they do have like plexiglass barriers for all the workers. People in the clinic are wearing a lot of full protective gear because, again, they see a lot of the patients that could have COVID-19. I was the only one in the waiting room at that time. And so I went up and then I checked in and then I sat for a few minutes and then they brought me in to see the healthcare provider. If you're experiencing symptoms, it could be like another illness besides COVID-19. So when I went in, I had a sore throat. So they also tested me for strep at the same time that they tested me for COVID. I talked to the healthcare provider. She said I qualified for COVID-19 testing. And then she gave me a little printout and then sent me back out to my car. And then I drove around the back. And then a healthcare provider came out and they were wearing the full gown, the face shield, all the protective gear. I gave them my little printout. And then they took the sample. And for that time, they took a sample in the back of my throat and then a nasopharyngeal swab, which is through the nose.
Now, I've heard so many different versions. I've had a COVID test, but it was a spit test. I've never had the nose test. I've heard so many different versions about this test. Some people say, oh, it was nothing. And some people say, oh, I absolutely hated that. That was the worst experience. Is it a painful test if they do the nasal test? Did you find it painful?
I don't know that I would call it painful. I would say it was definitely uncomfortable. And the feeling is sort of equivalent of jumping off the high board and getting water up your nose.
Oh, okay.
Kind of that feeling, like
I got it.
Because they're really having to use the swab has to go into the upper sinus passages, and so that is definitely uncomfortable. It's pressure; it makes your eyes water and kind of sting. But it's over very quickly. Sometimes people do a kind of sneeze or cough, or their eyes are watering afterward. I mean, it was unpleasant for a few moments, but honestly, it was better than I was expecting based on what I'd heard. You know, some people just you kind of say how awful it was. Like, I felt like they were getting their brain probed. And I wouldn't equate it to that. But again, yeah, I mean, I think you go in knowing it's not going to be pleasant, but it's going to be over quickly. Mm-hmm. It's really not as bad as I had expected. And so when I talk to employees that are going through the testing process, I usually ask them too, I'm like, what's it like for you? And most people say the same thing. Mm-hmm. I think some people might be a little more sensitive in their nose, or if you're really stuffed and it's already very inflamed, it can be a little more uncomfortable. But it wasn't as bad as I thought. And a lot of people told me the same thing, that they'd heard the horror stories and they were scared to get tested. And then once they had it done, it wasn't really that bad.
Okay. Well, yeah, I know that feeling of getting water up your nose, after jumping off a high board. So I get that. Okay. That's helpful.
Yeah.
That's relatable. You had the experience, the little water up the nose feeling, and then, and then you drove away.
Yep. And then I drove away and I went home.
And then you got nervous, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And you have to wait.
Yeah. Then you have to wait. And then you think about, where could I have got this from? Who have I been around during this time? That when you start having COVID symptoms, you're actually on day three of when you could be contagious. So the 2 days before, the 48 hours before you feel sick are also the time when you could potentially be contagious. So then you have to think about, well, gosh, I felt fine, but where did I go? Who was I around? Was I wearing a mask? Was I keeping my distance? And for me, I'm very careful about all those things. But in my household, I have 2 children and my spouse. So, I always think about them and worry about that. And then when you get your testing done through McFarland Clinic, you do have your results sent to you through MyChart, as well as getting a phone call from the nurse. So
MyChart is an online service.
Yep, it's an online service, and I have the app downloaded on my phone, and I get a notification if they post something. So I was sort of obsessively checking my chart in case I missed something. It can take up to 72 hours to get your test results. Most of the time, I've been able to get that a little more quickly. So that's been a relief as well. When you get your test results, they'll call you, tell you what they are, let you know what that means. And then you also get the notice through your MyChart what your test result was as well. So definitely very clear about what you need to do. It's just really at that point waiting to find out to see, and then thinking about, what else do I need to be worrying about? What do I need to do?
Right.
What do I need to plan for if I'm going to be stuck at home for the next 10 days?
Right. So with McFarland Clinic, the process just gets started by calling that line. The respiratory, and then following the instructions. You had to pay for that. That's a service that you pay for, right?
Yeah, it goes through your insurance. A lot of health insurances waive the cost for the test. But like if you go in and you get tested for other illnesses, for example, like I said, I got also tested for strep. That will be built through insurance. There may be a copay or a cost for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have just a few minutes left, but you also did presumably you've always tested negative, right? Because you've been
Correct.
At work. You did the test Iowa site as well. Was that was that a different process? Can you run through that in about
Sure.
3 minutes?
Yeah. So to do Test Iowa, you need to do the online assessment. As you mentioned, you go to testiowa.com, and then there's a link on there to start the assessment. It goes through a series of questions. ask you just for your basic demographics, and then ask you if you have been around someone that tested for COVID, what your symptoms are when they started. And then when you get to the end of the assessment, I'll let you know if you qualify for testing. You know, most people will qualify for testing. And so when you get to the end of the assessment, when it tells you if you qualify, the next step is signing up for a place to get tested. And here in Story County, we have the Story County Test Clinic. And to get to that, you need to choose additional options. And then at the next screen, it'll give you the option to choose the Story County Test Iowa Clinic. When you go to that, you click on that for your option, then it gives you the number to call. And then you call that number to set up an appointment time. So what I did when I went through that process is that I called, I left a voicemail because they didn't answer right away. And so I tell people, like, if you don't get a person when you call, leave a message and they'll call you back. Don't wait and to try to get in touch with someone because there isn't always someone there answering the phones, or they may be talking to someone else. And then they call me back like in 30 minutes. I did read off the code that I was given. So when you finish the assessment, it takes your email address and then it sends you a QR code through your email. And so through that, I read off the letters and numbers to the staff person, and then they signed me up for an appointment time. At my appointment time, I went out to, it's on the ISU Research Park, 2503 South Route Drive. And there's a pretty big sign by the road that tells you where to go. So follow the signs. And then there's a little drive-through area with a tent over it. And there's two lanes with people that are taking samples. And then you show them your QR code on your phone. And then they take the basopharyngeal swab. They give you a packet, and then you're on your way.
Okay, thank you. And Rich Higgins, Fire Chief, is going to be here later in the hour, and he'll talk a little bit about that site as well. You got your results back around 72 hours from there?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
I think, and actually, in both situations, I was lucky to get it back earlier than that. So again, a little less time having to wait and, you know, wring your hands while you're trying to figure out if you are
Right.
going to be, like I said, be home for longer, or if you're going to be able to go back to work and you don't have COVID.
Well, fortunately, in your case, it hasn't been that. You've been able to test negative. So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing your experience and making this a little bit more relatable. I think it's something that all of us are kind of running through our minds these days, and appreciate you walking us through it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
We've been
You're
speaking with
welcome.
our Andrea Cardenas, who is the health officer at the City of Ames Human Resources Department. Thank you, Andrea.
Can't you see? Come with me. creator has a master plan. Happiness for every man. The creator has a working plan. Happiness for every man. The creator has a master plan. Peace and happiness for every man. The creator makes but one. Peace and happiness.
This is Local Talk, COVID Relief Radio. I'm your host, Ursula Rudenberg, for this hour, and I am ready to talk flowers. These last beautiful days of Indian summer provide the perfect time and opportunity to get away from it all, go into nature, and gather seeds. It's time to gather seeds. Joe Lukowski, botanist, is on Local Talk here with us today. He was here last week to talk about prairies. Welcome back, Joe, and talk to us about seed harvesting. It's that time.
Ursula, thank you for having me. Well, the last week I was down at Carl Kurtz's farm, and I went with some people, and we just looked at all the different plants we could harvest. Now, on a small scale, you can go out at different times of the year when different plants are ready, and you can hand pick. But on a large scale, which is what we need to implement, we have to use existing technology such as combines. You know, the combine does it all. You know, it gets a plant of a certain height. So in order to harvest seeds on a large scale, you're going to have to take multiple passes of your combine or your hand to get the full spectrum of the local ecotype plants.
Okay, but we're going to talk today about doing this on a scale that you or I or somebody listening to this show could just go out and do as one individual. So I was interested in talking about like maybe one plant that we could address when, like, say I wanted to go out and harvest some seeds in this beautiful weather. And we had talked about maybe focusing on the coneflower.
Sure. You know, the coneflower or milkweed, I guess we can think about those. Those are really common plants that people are familiar with. The Echinacea purpura, the pale purple coneflower, I believe. There's a lot of different species of coneflower, but there is one that is local to here. So what's really important for prairie seed collection and harvesting is that we choose and pick plants that are native to our local area. And for the purple coneflower, you just wait till the petals fall off, the head of the flower starts to turn brown, and you can use your fingers to just rub the seeds out. You can either let them drop into the soil as they would do naturally, or you can move them somewhere else as nature does naturally also. And that can increase the resilience of our ecosystem.
So, Joe, before you go on, describe the coneflower.
Okay, so it's in the Asteraceae family, which is a sunflower. So it's going to have that Fibonacci fractal spiral in the middle when you look at it. And this particular one has drooping purple, pink petals. And of course, when you go across the country, you'll see yellow versions, you'll see different shades of pink or purple, you'll see different sizes. And you'll even go to the big box stores and you'll see colors that didn't even exist naturally. And sure, humans can plant those, but they don't have natural relationships to build off. And plus, they're probably soaked in pesticides.
Joe, one thing I've always wondered is, some coneflowers, like you said, have the petals. They have these big purple petals. They droop. Other ones don't droop. Is that a different type of coneflower, or is that just a coneflower that's sad?
That is just a different type of coneflower. There's at least four or five different varieties in North America that I'm aware of. And, of course, the one I was just referencing was a human creation that I believe is called Cherokee Spirit or something. Not a very good name, considering our country's history. And we should look back to indigenous thought process and indigenous ways, especially when it comes to our native ecosystem and agriculture.
Okay, so where would one find the coneflower that you're describing, the one that has the drooping leaves, which is an indigenous one? Where if I wanted to spend an afternoon finding some coneflower seeds, where would you suggest that I go?
Okay, I have two different places I recommend today. The first one is in Iowa. It's called Blooming Prairie Nursery. Now, Bob and Tessa, they specialize in having local ecotype coneflowers or native plants. And that's one place. If you don't want to get on the highway, there's also groups on Facebook. If people do Facebook, they can post in Ames Garden, Trader Swap. There's different local Iowa gardening pages. And you can even have someone trade you some seeds, send them, but make sure they know the source.
Well, if I wanted to go and find a coneflower to get seeds myself, where would you suggest that I look finding a wild coneflower?
They're kind of all over the place, but I know that there are prairie strips south of town. So south of the highway in Ames, there are prairie research fields. However, I don't recommend you walk onto the research fields without permission because you might compact the soil. So when walking onto a piece of land, make sure you have the permission of the landowner, whether it's private or public property. And that's why I suggested Facebook, because that might save you a lot of time just kind of aimlessly wandering looking for stuff, because you could just figure out where it's at.
Okay.
It's always fun to walk around.
Okay, so let's say, assume you have some in your yard then. Like you have some coneflowers in your yard. Tell us again how you harvest the seed from the plant.
Well, for this particular plant, you're going to wait till it starts to dry down a bit. A lot of the leaves, those green leaves, are going to die back. And the plant's going to be very brown. It's going to lose a lot of its chlorophyll or its green energy. Once it starts to dry back, it's going to get brittle and break easily. And once you be able to just use your fingers to rub against the flower head over a plate, then you'll just start to see the hard little dry seeds drop out. And you can put them in a glass mason jar that you recycled. You can put it in a small paper bag in a dry, dark location. You can just scatter it in your yard where you want it to go, and perhaps even take half of your yard and convert it to a native planting, saving on input costs and mowing costs.
So now one of the things that I've heard is that a lot of seeds need to go through cold weather before they can germinate. So with seeds from the coneflower, does it have to experience cold before it can become a plant again? Like I've heard some people take seeds and put them in the freezer for a while or the refrigerator so that the seed experiences a cold period.
I'm not exactly sure if this specific plant requires a cold stratification period, but in general, a lot of plants do because they're adapted to our native environments, especially for like stone fruits, peaches and plums. They might require a cold period because in nature, if you think about it, the fruit drops, the winter happens, the seed's there, it goes through winter by itself, and then in the spring it comes awake and starts to grow. And humans try to replicate this with our in-home refrigerators or our seed storage centers or our seed banks. And that's good. Any effort to replicate the conditions of nature to create biodiversity is welcome. And I recommend anyone in Ames to check out the Seed Science Center. It's a globally accredited institution and group. They do lots of great work, and they can answer any specific question on how to save seed, when to harvest it, sources for seeds, and great information there. Lots of different complicated information. Seeds are stored in a wide variety of conditions and harvested along.
So different seeds have different conditions they need once they're harvested.
Yes.
So if you have an echinacea seed or a coneflower seed, when you want to plant it, do you have to put it in the ground, or can you just kind of throw it on the ground and let it find its own way into the soil?
That's a good question. This year I started a business called Get Joe Plants, and I grew some of this Echinacea purpura, and I just took a simple tray with some potting soil or some native soil, and I just mixed it up together, just stuck the seed in, watered it, and it grew. However, I recommend maybe doing that in a bigger pot because the roots really want to go down there. Or if you can, direct seed would be the best. You can just go ahead and poke it into the soil in your yard with your finger or a stick. That should do. Just bury it just a little bit. In general, the rule of thumb for planting seeds is maybe plant just as deep as the seed is. You don't want to stick it super deep. If it's a bigger seed, you're going to want to put it a little deeper so things can't dig it up. But yeah, definitely getting the seed in the ground. But when I grew it, it grew just fine, but it definitely wants to be in the ground, or it wants a bigger pot. So when you're planting things with deep tap roots, you're going to want a deeper pot.
Now, the echinacea is a medicinal plant, correct?
Yes.
Can one use it oneself? I mean, is this something that, can you take a plant from your yard, the echinacea, and turn it into tea or something like that?
Okay, so when it comes to foraging or harvesting your own plants, one of the most important things is to know the history of the piece of property. For example, your yard could have been the site of a radioactive testing site, or your previous landowner could have dumped toxic pesticides all over the place. So before you just start eating and making teas of plants, you should definitely do your research. And let's say the plant's health of your yard is fine. And by all means, if you can correctly identify the plants, which is also very important, don't be eating random plants or mushrooms. Identify twice, consume once. So once you're completely positive, you know exactly what you're dealing with and you verified it, then by all means, take some, have some tea, save some seeds, share with your friends. But be very careful when you're sharing information about consumption of plants, because not only can certain compounds in plants cause toxic reactions in people, they could also interact with medication. So definitely talk to your doctor before taking any herbal medicine or starting any new dietary programs.
And with the echinacea, is it the petals of the flowers that make the tea, or is it the leaves of the plant?
It really depends, because when I've done my research on this topic, I've seen different species being used in a combination of plant parts. I've seen the seed being used. I've also seen the root being used. And it really depends on the plant medicine. I'm not an expert in plant medicine. I do have echinacea tea from time to time. I've had the echinacea purpura and the echinacea angustifolia. Those two both have interesting and overlapping properties. And so going back to native plants, these native plants are the ones that have these natural exudates or natural plant chemistries in them. And when we get the cultivars, sometimes because of the genetic breeding process, we lose those benefits that we need, the things that we want, or the things that the non-human other survive off.
We're speaking with Joe Lukowski, who is a botanist, also somebody that cares a lot about the prairie. Joe, what are your favorite prairie flowers other than the coneflower?
You know, that's a really tough question, and I thought a lot about it. I guess my answer to that would be the widest and most biodiverse mix imaginable. I'd say hundreds and hundreds of flowers and plants. That would be my favorite type. Because, you know, it's nice to, you know, look at a house and see a couple different flowers. But what's really nice is going out to a prairie and seeing hundreds or more species. And you see the full connectedness of nature. Like Douglas Calamy, he's a professor in Delaware, and he has long been advocating for homegrown national parks, because nature isn't limited to these small natural habitats that we've designated. It's everywhere. It's us. So we have to take our yards and plant native stuff to connect these fragmented areas. And through the native plant agriculture, we have these high biodiversity returns that prevent ecosystem collapse, because insects are super important. If we don't protect our insects and give them habitat, the entire food chain will collapse. Because what eat insects? You know, they support by plants, and then the animals, and then the all these different interconnections we don't necessarily see. So my answer is as many plants as possible everywhere to support as many species as possible everywhere.
Okay, I like that. Well, thank you, Joseph, for joining us, and we'll have you back for another commentary on plants in our area. Thank you for talking with us today, and that's a beautiful vision of the biodiversity of plants in our area. Thank you, Joe.
You are quite welcome, and can I make two more points, please?
Real quick.
Sure. So also in addition to Blooming Prairie Nursery, I have a friend in Illinois that has Perennial Crops Nursery and Services, which has low-input, pest-resistant, disease-resistant, hardy, widely adapted plants for food forest native plantings. Check them out, perennialcropsnursery.wordpress.com. And I also like Ecosia. It's a Microsoft Bing-powered search engine that donates a lot of ad revenue to planting trees globally. And they are doing great work. Every 45 searches can generate enough ad revenue to plant a tree. And they have done amazing work. Ecosia is another way to casually support the non-human other. And thank you for having me on.
Joe, spell that?
Yes.
Sure.
It is E-C-O-S-I-A.
Ecosia. Okay. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks. Have a great day.
And this is Local Talk Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour. We're happy to have Susan Guiazda and Fire Chief Rich Higgins here to give us some more public information. Welcome back to Local Talk, Susan, and welcome back, Rich Higgins.
It's good to be here.
Hi there. Good to hear from you. Okay, so Chief Higgins, dealing with the pandemic has been a lot of your responsibility. Tell us a little bit about what's happening and where are we at with community response to this problem?
Better. So, first, thanks for having us on. Really appreciate it. I'm part of a small city team that is helping lead the charge, but I'm also part of a big community team that is working every day trying to make sure that we're doing everything possible to keep our community safe. And to be in that partnership, I think listeners have heard this from me every time I've been on, but that partnership that we have with Iowa State, Mary Greeley, the county, local nursing homes, the clinics, is just so important for our community and what we're doing here. And that's what is really going to help us get ahead of this is not doing it individually, but working as a community. Iowa State can't solve this problem alone. Neither can the city of Ames. But if we work together, we can reach enough people that I think we can get solid messaging out and really make a difference. So I think everyone is seeing the news and seeing that we are having a rise in cases in the state as well as Story County.
Yeah, in fact, Ames made the news for a while, right? When the New York Times listed us as the worst per capita, that must have been. It's weird. I mean, it must have been a very unpleasant thing to see, but in a way, it was bracing, shall we say? It in some ways it may have helped you help kind of get the word out and get people to take it seriously, right?
It did. So as much as we don't want to see Ames on national news for anything negative, we'd rather it be something positive that we're doing because there's a lot of great things happening. It did help create awareness and help people realize that this is a real thing that's going on. Just because you or your family hasn't been impacted by it yet doesn't mean that it's not happening out there. So we hope not to make the national news, but it did happen. And that was back in September where we saw one of our biggest spikes. Just to kind of keep it in perspective, back on September 1st, we had 117 new cases in one day. That's the largest spike that we've ever had in Story County.
Wow. That must have been quite a day.
Yeah, that was a busy day. And you got to remember, too, Iowa State was doing a lot of testing. That's when they were bringing thousands of students into Lead Rec Center over a little over a week and doing all the testing before students came back to campus. That's one great thing that Iowa State did was be proactive with bringing students back and testing them before they introduced them into the community. Just to put it in perspective a little bit where we're sitting at the last couple of days, because we have seen an increase, but it's relatively low. We've had 82 back on Monday the 2nd. Yeah, yesterday we were sitting at 39 new cases for our county. So it's happening, but it's the spike isn't as big as what it was back in that end of August, early September. So it's something I think we have a much better grip on the mitigating that risk with some of those precautions, wearing masks, social distancing, washing hands, staying home when you're sick, physical barriers. We've got a lot of those in place. So I think that's going to help keep that number low, but we're on a roller coaster. And unfortunately there's going to be some ups and some downs. We just hope that we don't stay at the high level of this pandemic for too long, that we can keep coming back down from it.
Yeah. I mean, how is morale among the people who are leading this team? It must be an incredibly stressful thing to constantly have to track and plan what to do next and just kind of monitor.
We're definitely busy. In fact, there's a smaller subset of that team that we've been meeting over the last couple of days. In fact, we've been together twice this week already doing site visits for our Story County Test Iowa Clinic, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But the group, we remain positive because we know that we can do this, and we can do this as a community, and to be able to help be out in front of that and lead that charge. We have a lot of pride in that and know that we have skill sets that we bring to the table that will help our community. So as much as it's frustrating and stressful, we also know that we're blessed to be in these opportunities to serve our community and make a difference.
So when you say we can do this, what specifically are you thinking? Are you thinking we know how to, you know, track this properly, or what for you in this case means a successful operation? What do you look to for indicators?
Yeah, it's really a multifaceted approach. So we're looking at tracking. We're doing an excellent job of tracking right now. The school systems, Story County Public Health, they've done an excellent job of setting up ways to trace and do contact tracing. You just had Andrea on. She's doing it for the city of Ames. We work with the school districts. They've hired individuals to come in and do contact tracing. So that's one of the facets that's really helped us better understand this pandemic where we're at. Testing has also been a huge benefit for our community. We're one of the few counties that has a clinic set up in here to do testing. That's part of this, the state test Iowa process. And that's something we've worked really hard to do, so we have a better understanding of where we're at. The partnerships is also another thing that we look at how strong our partnerships are. How well is Iowa State doing with testing their students and making it available? How can we support what they're doing? How can the clinics and the hospital and the community work together to test and get information out to people.
So you feel that this is going smoothly, that the communication is really good between everybody and everybody's kind of working together?
Absolutely. Yeah, without a doubt, everyone's working together. That we got to remember, we didn't create the pandemic. We're just trying to work through the pandemic. And we've done really well in trying to spread this out as much as we can. And that there's... it's really the community doing it. It's people, everyone doing their part, wearing their masks, staying home when they're sick, washing hands, all those good things. But what we're doing, we're allowing the hospital as much as possible to take patients in at a rate that they can treat them. So some of the treatments that the hospital are doing take 5 days or longer for patients, depending on the severity of it. So if we can spread that out over time, the hospital can absorb that type of increase in the number of patients. And that's what we're really trying to do. We don't have a cure for this right now. We don't have a vaccine for it just yet. So what can we do? And that's really just to spread it out and try to limit the number of people getting it. Because it's going to happen. We know that. So how do we mitigate that? We try to spread it out over time and share information with people, get them tested, and try to stay.
So that's really still the name of the game, is keeping it at a rate that the hospital can handle.
Absolutely. Until we can get a cure, that's our best approach right now.
Yeah. Who runs the Test Iowa site? Who is actually the staff? Are they local? Are they with the hospital or with the clinic, or are they state workers?
No, so they're all local. Actually, Mary Greeley Medical Center has hired them, and they're Mary Greeley Medical Center employees that staff the site.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I can tell you a little bit about what we're doing. So Andrea talked about our site that's down south on South Loop Drive. That site is going away at the end of this month. And so over the last couple of weeks, a small team, we've been busy looking at different sites, going out, doing site tours, working with Dan Colhane and the chamber, trying to identify another site that we can get people into. And it's going to be important in the winter months that we have a site where people can pull in, where our workers can be safe and not out in the elements. So we're hoping in the next week or two that we'll have an announcement for our community of a new location. And we're pretty excited to know that we're going to be able to keep doing testing in Story County, because I think that's important for Story County keeping a grasp on it. But it's also for the surrounding counties. We have over 1,000 people so far from Boone County. I think it was around 1,300 that have utilized the Story County Test Iowa site, which is great. We want to be a good community partners to our surrounding counties as well.
So if you're in Boone County and you want to use a Test Iowa site, you also find a Story County location.
Absolutely. In fact, any from any county, when you go on and you go through the Test Iowa website and register to get tested, anyone from any county can come into Story County to get tested. So if we have somebody that's here doing business or somebody that's passing through, they could utilize the test site. That's the nice thing about the way Iowa has set this up. It's available to anybody. But being in Story County, obviously, we're going to see a higher number of Story County residents utilizing that site.
So the Story County test site is really the Iowa test site for all of the surrounding counties that
Correct.
Would be in our listening area. Yeah.
Yep.
Boone, absolutely. Polk, Hardin, Marshall County. Okay. And I have heard, rumors that the Test Iowa site is closing, but you're saying there will be a new site so that it's not really permanently going away.
Correct. We had a great site visit yesterday. I won't release the site just yet because we want to get everything finalized, but we think we have a great location that's going to get us through the winter months.
Is it going to be in town or somewhere else?
Right now it's going to be in town. And
it's
so there's
downtown or campus town?
Nope, it's neither of those, but it's going to be near side ride route. So that's important. That's why these partnerships are so important.
Let me see.
We want to help the Iowa State students as much as we need to help all the residents of Story County and surrounding counties. And we know that not every Iowa State student has access to a vehicle. So how can we get them out to the test site? We got to make sure that it's near a SciRide route. We got to make sure it's easy to get to. We can do signage. So there's a lot of things that go into developing a site and making sure it's going to work for our community.
So is it in Somerset?
Well, I think the important thing here is that it's not closing. It's simply relocating and that they are looking at a couple of different potential sites because they're looking for things like convenience, bus routes. How could Iowa State students get there? How could other people get there? And how could people out in the county get there conveniently? So as soon as we know that location, Ursula, we'll let you know.
I promise, Ursula. Yeah, we will get that information out. There's just so much work that goes into this, and we want to make sure that we get it right.
So you're saying that the drive-through is an important part of it, and the accessibility in terms of people being able to get there, and presumably it also has to be in a place where it's safe to bring people who are potentially ill, right? So it has to be the people in the area need to be protected in some way from possible infection. So I can imagine it's not easy to find the right site.
It has been a tough couple of weeks with a lot of us scratching our heads and being frustrated. Because you're right, Ursula, not everyone wants to have a Story County Test Iowa clinic in their backyard. They want to have access to it, but you don't want it in your backyard. And unfortunately, a lot of that's around misinformation of thinking that if you have a clinic in your area that you're at a higher risk. Well, that's why we do things outside. That's why people stay in their vehicles when we do the testing. There are so many safety precautions that are in place to help limit the spread. Mary Greeley Medical Center and their staff are professionals. They do this every day. They understand the protective measures that they need to do. So we're in great hands, and there's protocols that are being followed. So
okay. Well, thank you. Well, I tried to get a scoop here for you guys here on KHOI, but they were strong and held fast. So to be announced.
Yes. Thank you, Ursula.
Thank you. Anything else we need to get out before we close for the hour?
I have just a few things not related to testing, but just reminding you that tonight is the town budget meeting at 7 p.m. We talked about it earlier this week, and we'll have Dwayne Pitcher with us tomorrow to talk about how that went. And also Yard Waste Free Day, our No Charge Yard Waste Day, whatever you want to call it, is this weekend. There is the option to pick up a voucher and use your voucher to drop your leaves and brush Friday instead of Saturday. This is the big one, leaves and brush on Saturday. So if you can't make it Saturday, pick up a voucher at Resource Recovery and go on Friday.
Okay, thank you. And that meeting tonight about the budget, is that when the city manager or somebody is going to explain the budget? That's tonight, right?
Yep. So city manager Steve Shanker facilitates the meeting. Dwayne Pitcher, finance director, goes over a brief overview about revenue and expenditures. Then we open it up to the public to give us their input. It kicks off the budget process that continues through February of 2021. We have to certify our budget by March for the fiscal year of 21-22.
And to watch that, where does one go?
You can go on Zoom. You can watch it on Channel 12. All that information is available on our website. So look at the front page of cityofames.org. Go to the calendar, and you can get all the different ways you can watch that meeting.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for Ames. And thank you, Rich Higgins, Fire Chief. And thanks, both of you, for your work on behalf of our public. Appreciate it. Anna Magnuson, Anna Banana, you're there, right?
Yeah, thank you, Ursula. I really loved how you played that hot and cold game with Rich Higgins to guess the
new. Didn't work. Didn't work.
Didn't work.
He didn't buy it.
But good try. You were very persistent. I liked it.
My theory, well, I won't float a theory. I won't start any rumors, but anyway.
Yeah, probably a good idea. Well, I know you didn't want to talk about election and give a relief to our listeners about it, but I did want to give a heartfelt thank you to everyone who voted. And no matter who you casted your ballot for, I thank you for voting. So I did find this heart-to-heart message from Kat Simmons titled, There is magic in the spaces in between. And she shares the following. Today's I sit between things, feeling peaceful and excited one minute and up and down and sideways the next. I find this brings me a sense of calm and remembrance, a reminder that there is great magic to be found in the spaces in between. As Dew the Turtle from Finding Nemo said, when you get to the trench, swim through it, not over it. Iconic advice to remember when facing whatever the present moment brings us. So why do we feel such discomfort when faced with being in between anything? Why this almighty rush from point A to point B day in and day out? I felt it, God knows I have, and still do, sometimes as though there's a fire within. So here's my poem. I hope it will bring you some peace and whip up the magic and memory you have in your own soul. Titled Deep, beneath the chatter of the world, enveloped in a rich, pregnant silence, immutable power winds its way through the spaces between. You'll know it because you felt it, and you'll know the discomfort between this and that. When you're feeling lost and fidgety, tune in. I am your ghostwriter. I am your unseen. I am the instigator, the presence in your being. You are incandescent in your own blackened wasteland, strewn with soot and chaff. Bold as brass among the silverware, like broken shards of light upon the glass. Discomfort is a hallowed bunion of pithiness and point. Our most painful, unbearable bits are the best way in. If we'd only stop and sit, listen to the language of the heart, sit with it. A vast and ancient wilderness, fierce as the seven seas and tender as a mother's arms. Space is full of magic, power, and light, a vibrancy that lifts our stature, fills our bones, a shortcut to delight. Don't rush into thoughts, but sit down in your soul. Let your body do the talking, feel all the messages it brings. Are they feelings of joy and peace, tingling and ease, or perhaps a sagging sorrow, frustration, hope for tomorrow? Settling into confidence that holds your heart in place, as though suspended from a force that's far greater from within, far greater than flesh and bone and far from commonplace. You might feel, I'm not quite here or there, but in between somewhere. I've got nothing or too much to do and no place to go. Or something isn't quite right in my soul. You'll have to sit and face the void. Face your fidgeting, your fussing, and your feelings. Face a lot. We're so used to filling space that we lose the simplicity of each moment's grace. Confidence grows with awareness, and that's the magic within, the power of presence herein found in the spaces in between. So that, thank you, Kat Simmons, for sharing that, especially as we sit in a time of in-between right now. And if you would like to share with us what's in your heart, I invite you to call or text Anna Banana at 515-809-0077, or you can email me at khoiradio@gmail.com and put heart to heart in the subject line. So thank you for listening to this individual heart-to-heart message that connects us to a community of love, care, and support that is KHOI, the heart of Iowa, which is you and me. And until next time, I hope each moment of your day fills your heart with love, laughter, and peace. So thanks, Ursula. Back to you.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you for your heart-to-heart message. And you've been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Anna Banana. Thank you for being with us for this hour. Remember that you can hear a recording of this show later today online at KHOI-FM and find the information that we gave you about finding testing sites and the links that you will need to find that information online. KHOI will begin fundraising on the air next week. We plan to make it worth your while to listen during this time. We'll provide COVID election relief as well as up-to-date news and information. We hope you will enjoy KHOI and give generously during this time. In fact, you can start now by going to khoifm.org and use the button that says Become a Member Donor. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. And Anna, where will they see us again?
They'll see us again on the radio.
See you again on the radio.